Turner, one dribble, handoff to George, played by Lure on the drive, left hand to the foul line, count it, and put him on the line. He was fouled coming across the foul line right to left, and he was hit as he scored. A chance for a three-point play.
Hello and welcome into another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, Pacers radio host and sideline reporter. Jeremiah Johnson, TV host and sideline reporter. He is fresh off that game in Detroit. Just got back what I would guess is early this morning, late last night from that game out in Detroit. It was a really interesting game. So many things to talk about. I think in a lot of ways, Jeremiah, that game was a microcosm of the season and what needs to happen going forward. A lot of interesting talking points about it. We're taping this on a Wednesday morning, so the game for us was last night. But first and foremost, you were there, a thrilling game in Detroit, and an important game, I think, maybe more than just the average game from a confidence standpoint. The Pacers had so many chances this season to get that elusive third straight victory, but they were able to do it. I think that's big from a confidence standpoint. What did you see out in Detroit?
You know, Pat, you might think that the players block some of that out and the talk about a three-game winning streak is just something for media or fans, but when I interviewed Kevin Serafin at halftime, just with a generic comment about the first half and how he thought they played, he was pretty quick to say, we want to get a three-game winning streak. And I think that's something that this team has been reminded about from Nate McMillan and the coaching staff. I remember a couple of weeks ago when I talked with Aaron Brooks and I asked him a little bit of the state of the team type of question when we were in Washington, D.C., and he said, if we can just put a five-game winning streak together, we're going to be okay. And I think we talked about this last week, but I thought at the time, well, yeah, you got to start with three first. And I think that this team knew what they could do if they could put it all together, but they had to see the fruits of their labor. And that's something that Quinn Buckner said to me on the postgame show last night on television, was they had to see their hard work rewarded and some payoff for that. You can't just continue to work hard and then struggle and stumble in key situations and continue to think that everything's going to be okay. At some point, you have to see some results, especially on the road. And it's easier said than done to say, oh, just play like you do at home. Play that way on the road. But for whatever reason, the Palace has been a place that has not been daunting for this team. And so their first road win since winning at the Palace on December 17th is back at the Palace. And it's an important win because it's against a Pistons team that, if they get hot at the right time, they could be fighting the Pacers for a playoff spot. And now you have a 2-0 lead in the series with two more home games against Detroit. So building on what happened against the Magic and the Bulls, it's a very solid win. And it shows that there's a good potential for what this team can do in the second half of the season.
And three straight wins with Brooklyn and New York coming up. Brooklyn has been extremely poor on the road, a chance to string some together. We'll look into those opponents a little bit later here in the podcast. I want to stay with this game in Detroit. To me, the biggest differentiator was Paul George, 32 points in that game. You look at his last four games, really since some of his controversial, if you will, comments, 34 points, 32 points, and then the most recent game against, or the most recent home game against Orlando, he didn't play his final stretch of minutes. I think he finished with 19, but didn't play his normal slate of minutes because the Pacers didn't need him to. They needed him to again in Detroit, and he was very solid. 10 of 17 from the floor, 32 points on 17 shots. That's a fantastic ratio there. And we've seen Paul George so many times this season in late moments at Bankers Life Fieldhouse carry the Pacers to victory. But they only had four road wins this year, and a couple of them, I think, were when he wasn't in the lineup. At least one was when he wasn't in the lineup. And you talk about things carrying over from home to road that haven't so far this season. One of them is getting those late superstar moments from Paul George. He has been so good. He has delivered so many wins at home. But, you know, I think looking for a little bit more maybe from him in that regard on the road. And certainly he showed it last night, and certainly I think he showed a difference between what the Pacers and the Pistons are. The Pacers have that go-to guy in Paul George when he's performing, obviously, at that level. The Pistons don't, and I thought that was a major difference.
And you referenced when maybe a low point or when they were voicing some frustration at Chicago the day after Christmas, and in that game, Paul George had just one free throw attempt. And right now I'm looking at his free throw attempts really over a stretch of much of December until the day before or the game before Christmas against the Celtics, and I see three attempts, four attempts, two attempts, one attempts. We'll take a look at the last four games. 10 for 10 from the line against the Pistons, 6 for 7 from the line against the Magic, 9 for 9 in the home win against the Bulls, and 8 for 8 at the Wizards. So Paul decided after that loss to Chicago, he's just going to play the game. He referenced at some point that week some comments that we've all repeated a little bit and tried to gauge whether he's having fun playing the game. But Nate McMillan wanted the guys to just go play the game, attack the basket, and have some fun. But the free throw line story to me was the big story from the game, because if you look at a lot of the individual statistics, obviously the Pacers shot a season-best 58% from the field, but some of the other statistics lean just a little bit towards Detroit, the rebounding edge to the Pistons, the points in the paint, the fast break points. Not big margins, but slight advantages for the Pistons. But the free throw line, 26 for 30 for the team that is on the road compared to 10 for 12 from the Pistons. So you outscore them by 26 at or by 16 at the line, and you win by 5. And that's difficult to do on the road. And I think that's part of the mindset of attacking the basket. And Paul George deserves a lot of credit for getting to the line. But I think you have to give a lot of credit as well for Jeff Teague, because to Jeff Teague, he is really attacking the paint and making things happen. Attacking the basket, then dumping off, or attacking the basket, then finding guys open for three. 9 for 16 from the three-point, from outside the three-point arc. It's not spectacular from a numbers perspective, but the percentage, 56% from outside the three-point arc, so they were efficient. I just think that attacking the basket makes so many other things happen, and it was a very good performance from that perspective at Detroit.
They're not going to be able to shoot 58% all season, obviously, or 56% from the three-point line, but yeah, that 30 attempts to Detroit's 12 is huge. And you look at the three-point line, you know, it's kind of a give and take and a balance in this league. You see so many teams, Houston obviously comes to mind, Golden State has the personnel to do it, who almost can't shoot enough three-pointers. But the one thing about shooting a ton of threes does is it keeps you from getting to the line more often. The Pacers took 16 threes and hit 9 of them. Detroit took 13 more threes than Indiana. They took 29 and hit 10 of them. 35% is a fine percentage to shoot, but when you're shooting 13 more threes, it's going to take away some of your chances to shoot the free throw because you're not attacking. And the Pacers outscored the Pistons by 16 points from the line. That was a big difference. A player we haven't hit on is Monte Ellis, and it appears he's still on his minutes restriction, and we don't know yet what the lineup will be when he comes out of that minutes restriction. I think you and I are on a similar page here with what we would at least like to see them try, and I think last night was a pretty good indicator that it could work. Ellis played 20 minutes, 16 points, 6 of 6 from the floor, 4 of 5 from the foul line, had 3 assists during that stretch, and he was playing in a lot of those meaningful minutes late, which is, you know, the point I've always made is, look, you can start Glenn, but if Ellis is in the middle of a great game, those final minutes are the most important minutes, and just because you came out with a starting five doesn't mean that same five has to finish the game. And for the most part, that was Monte late in that game closing. I don't really like the plus-minus stat, but for what it's worth, he was a game-best plus 15 in the plus-minus, and his impact was certainly felt off the bench, I think, last night.
Yeah, Monte played a great role in the win against Detroit, and as you said, I like the offense for defense substitutions in the fourth quarter, and that's what Nate McMillan can do if Monte's coming off the bench, but he's playing well. If there are times in the fourth quarter that you need offense, then he's probably going to be your guy. Glenn can be an offensive player, but it's maybe scoring is maybe third or fourth on the list of things that he does well. But if there's a really strong, bigger two-guard that Nate McMillan needs someone to lock down on, then he puts Glenn Robinson III on the floor. So I really like the way the Pacers are starting games with that starting unit. They seem to be getting off to good starts, which is always important, especially on the road. And then I like that second unit because when Rodney Stuckey and Monte Ellis were both injured, it was basically C.J. Miles and Al Jefferson as your only scoring threats off the bench. Now, Aaron Brooks in the last week or two also has played well. So I think that Aaron Brooks is maybe benefiting a little bit by having Monte Ellis on the floor with him in the second unit. But now this is a bench that can outscore opposing benches instead of for so much of December and maybe late November seeing the Pacers just try to hold on and not be outscored too badly from the reserves. Last night, they outscored the Pistons reserves. And outside of Tobias Harris, Detroit really doesn't have much scoring off the bench. Ish Smith, Stanley Johnson, nice players, but they're not going to outscore a Pacers bench when CJ Miles is playing well and Monte Ellis is playing well and Al Jefferson has it going in the post. So I just like the makeup of this team as it is constructed right now, as they are playing with the current rotations. And I really like the fact that Nate McMillan is willing to mix things up. Some games, Kevin Serafin comes in and plays a lot. There may be other games where he needs to play CJ Miles at the four spot because of smaller stretch fours from the reserves. So I think Nate McMillan has shown a good amount of flexibility. And I think that maybe a week and a half ago, he might have even said Monte Ellis is our starter when he comes back. But I think I've heard him reference and insinuate that he likes what Glenn's doing right now and that he sees no reason to change it. So as long as all the attitudes can mesh and everybody can be happy and winning goes a long way towards making that happen, I don't see any reason for change. And we're still a long ways from Rodney Stuckey returning. I did ask Nate McMillan about that prior to the game last night for our interview that we always have with Nate on Pacers Live pregame just to get an update. And he did not insinuate that it would be anytime soon because of the fact that he worked so hard to get back, maybe was not quite 100%, and then had a re-aggravation of that hamstring. So I think they want Rodney Stuckey to be absolutely, without a doubt, 100% before they bring him back. And if there are no other injuries, you can wait, and that's luxury, because you can wait and not have to rush Rodney back because you've really got a good 10-man rotation right now, and you can't really even play 11. So if Rodney Stuckey was available, someone becomes the odd man out. Now, not to say that Rodney Stuckey doesn't deserve to be in over somebody that is currently in, but you can definitely wait till he's 100%, and then if somebody else would happen to go down, because it does happen in the NBA, then you hope that he's closer to 100%.
Yeah, the bench played really well in the game against Detroit specifically. We haven't even mentioned Kevin Serafin, who had 10 points and 5 boards in 15 minutes. Every single player off the bench was plus in the plus minus and certainly made a big difference. I want to transition here to a topic that is maybe not the most interesting to fans, but I really think it's going to determine the success the Pacers have this season. And we've talked about it here on the podcast, but I want to delve into it a little bit deeper. And I'm, of course, talking about the rebounding here. I thought both games in Detroit, and more specifically the game last night, is pretty much a microcosm of what's going to happen this season depending on how Indiana rebounds. You go back to that game on December 17th. The Pistons are a top 10 rebounding team in the league, and I want to say they were in the top 5 when they played them back on December 17th. They've got Drummond, who's one of the best rebounders in the league, first of all, and the rest of the team rebounds well. The Pacers out-rebounded them by double digits in that game in Detroit a few weeks ago and dominated the game. And I don't think there was any surprise that when the Pacers win the rebounding margin or win it significantly, almost always, there are a couple exceptions, but almost always the Pacers have come away with dominant victories. But they don't need, looking over this data now, we're 36 games in, there's a significant amount of data that we can talk about as it relates to rebounding. And the Pacers, by any, you know, by any measure, any statistical measure, are not a good rebounding team. But I think there's a lot of, you know, I tend to favor on the side of optimism, and I see a lot of optimism as it relates to the rebounding. If the Pacers can just do it at a high enough level, they don't even have to do it well, they just have to keep from getting killed on the glass. You look at the first half, Indiana was minus 3 on the glass, and the Pacers were up by 6. A good example of, you don't need to even win the rebounding game with this team. There's so many other pieces that have talent and can do other things. You don't even need to win the rebounding battle to have success. But in that third quarter, Detroit killed the Pacers on the boards. Detroit won the third quarter on the glass by 9 rebounds, which is crazy for a 12-minute stretch. And all of a sudden, a 6-point lead turned into, at times, a 2-point Pistons lead, and they had the game tied after 3. And then in the fourth, the Pacers came back and actually out-rebounded the Pistons in the fourth. And yeah, Detroit had that late flurry. If they didn't, if Marcus Morris doesn't hit a couple of those late threes, the Pacers win that game by 10 or more points. I think that is indicative of what the Pacers can expect this entire season. And I went back and looked. When the Pacers get out-rebounded by 10 or more, which I would consider getting dominated on the glass, it's happened 11 times this season, and they're 2-9. But to me, the Pacers aren't going to be a great rebounding team this year, at least with this personnel. It's not going to be a strength. But I think it is reasonable to say, to expect the Pacers to at least not get out-rebounded regularly by 10. I think that can be a goal that they can have going forward. And when the Pacers aren't out-rebounded by 10, they're 16-9. They're 7 games over 500 when that happens. And 16-9, if you extrapolate that, you know, to 82 games, that's a really good record. So I think going forward, you look at the Pistons game and how the rebounding scenario played out, I think that's a good indicator of how it will play out. And it has played out. And I think it's reasonable to expect Indiana to try to have a goal of, yeah, they can get out rebounded because they're so much better in so many other areas. They just can't get killed on the glass. And I'm curious on your thoughts on this. When they don't get killed on the glass, they're 16-9. They're not even winning the rebounding battle in most of those games. They're just not getting dominated. And when they don't get dominated, they've shown there is the talent that we thought there was coming into this season, and they can have, I think, a very good season going forward as long as they aren't killed on the glass.
Watching that game, that was what I took away from the third quarter, because the Pistons had 32 points, but they had 7 offensive rebounds in the third quarter alone. And that's the stat of the rebounding that I tend to look at even more than the total rebounds, because sometimes, you know, missed shots, they automatically lead to missed to rebounds, and you get a rebound off a missed free throw attempt also, and you can't control whether someone's going to make or miss the free throw attempt. But it's really the offensive rebounds, and when they lead to second chance points, you know, that's what I think just kills you, because it's an extra possession that you maybe work hard to stop someone and they get an extra possession out of it. And those offensive rebounds led to Detroit getting extra shots. They had 97 field goal attempts, and anytime I think you look at the box score and you see one team with 97 field goal attempts and the other with 74, you wouldn't think the team with 74 wins very often. And that's partially because Detroit is a good rebounding team, offensive rebounding team, and they had 16 last night. So I think your point is a valid one about that the Pacers aren't going to be a great rebounding team in terms of numbers, but I think that they just have to have it in their mind that whoever they're blocking out, that guy is not going to get an offensive rebound. And if you're facing someone like Andre Drummond, then the guards have to take some responsibility, knowing it's not just up to Miles Turner to make sure that Andre Drummond doesn't get an offensive rebound. You've got to smash down, you got to help on that. And those were, you know, some areas of weakness, but you'll have some of those on the road against a team that is a little bit desperate. I know Detroit had won the game coming into that one, so they had 1-1, but before that, I believe they'd lost 7 of 10 or 8 of 10, and so they were struggling, and they're at a critical juncture in their season. So they played hard, and attacking the glass is what they do well, and so they had some moments where they dominated the Pacers on the boards. But when Miles Turner came in the fourth quarter, came in maybe even earlier than he had been in the fourth quarter in some other games, I think it was about the 8-minute mark or the 8.5-minute mark that Miles came in the game with Thaddeus Young to help on the glass, he had 3 or 4 really important defensive rebounds fighting against Andre Drummond. So I think that that was definitely a big story in the game and something to watch moving forward.
Yeah, I thought, you know, going into this game, I thought it was going to be really tough. And I thought it was important that Indiana get their third straight win. But sort of like when you hear NFL teams, you know, the cliche there is how tough it is to beat a team 3 times in a row in one season. You know, when a team will play twice in the regular season and then face off against in the playoffs, you often see that team that lost the 2 games in the NFL in the regular season win that playoff game. It's just so tough to beat a team 3 times. In the NBA, as long as you're not talking about one of the bottom dwellers, if it's a team that is around you in the standings, it's really hard to win both games at their place. There's a pride thing there. There's the inherent advantage that comes with being at home versus the road. The Pacers haven't been a good road team this year. And as you mentioned, Detroit's desperate. They lost now 8 out of 10, 7 of 9 coming into the game. You look at, they beat Cleveland, who was shorthanded, but otherwise, since Jackson has come back, they don't really have any impressive wins. The wins that they have been against teams like Miami without Dragic and without Whiteside, like they faced in their previous game. So I thought certainly that game against Detroit it's a major gut check game for Detroit. They're now 5 under. You know, they're trying to figure out here, can they catch themselves and get themselves, as we near the halfway point, back into contention, which we'll take a look at the standings in a moment. The answer is they absolutely can. They're still the Eastern Conference standings are still very close. But I certainly thought that was a game for Detroit that was a bit of a gut check. And for the Pacers to win a game that was a gut check for an opponent in their arena, I think is significant as well. You mentioned Drummond, those 7 offensive rebounds. The Pacers had just 6. You touched on this a moment ago, but I wanted to go back to it. Stuckey is out, obviously, and I think that's going to be the case, as you mentioned, for a little while longer, and maybe we revisit this when he's healthy. But I think you've got a pretty solid 10-man rotation, and you can debate whether Ellis is going to go back or not when he's 100%. But have you settled at least where we are right now on the 10 guys that should be playing, and that Serafin in that rotation coming off the bench playing 15 or so minutes, and Monte Ellis as well coming off the bench? Do you like where they are right now, at least in finding that lineup cohesion that I know they've been searching for nearly half the year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even before Monte Ellis was injured and there was some discussion about whether Glenn Robinson III should start and what about Monte, and he struggled a little bit to start the season. I think that I can remember our podcast in Portland. I think I said that I kind of like that starting lineup with Glenn Robinson III. At the time, I'm not sure that we referenced Kevin Serafin, but you have to think back to some of those games in the first part of the season where they got a spark from Kevin Serafin off the bench, and I think that Nate McMillan realized he maybe had been missing that, and this is not anything meant to slight Lavoy Allen, but he and Kevin Serafin are just different players, and sometimes you just need a little more energy off the bench, and Serafin's not a double-digit scorer, but the fact that a couple of those jumpers he's been knocking down recently, that's not really Lavoy Allen's game at all, and I just liked also, I think Lavoy is a pretty good passer, but look, Serafin's been making some pretty nice passes when he gets it in the post, and I just seem to think that he's playing pretty well alongside Al Jefferson, so that's really the one change besides Monte Ellis in that second unit that you're mentioning. The other one I would just say is I'd like to see the Pacers do what they can to get C.J. Miles on track a little bit. And this is his third season with the Pacers. And we've seen throughout his time here, he go through stretches, not just games, but really within weeks of the season where he's really scoring a lot and doing a lot of things. And there's other games that he just doesn't have it as much. And I think he's maybe in one of these streaks. He did have that great fourth quarter against the Celtics, but by and large over the last 2 or 3 weeks, it hasn't been vintage CJ Miles offensively. Now he's still getting some shots, and I think some of the shots maybe he's getting, maybe rushing a little bit, maybe trying too hard to get in that groove. Last night just played 12 minutes and 1 for 4 from the field, but he did knock down an important three-pointer, and I think that's something that Chris and I talked about after the game last night off camera, was that everybody was pretty happy, and I guess I'll borrow something from Nate Taylor of the Indianapolis Star. I talked with him just prior to getting on the bus for the airport, and he said it was probably the happiest locker room that he had seen since the season opening win against the Dallas Mavericks. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, it's one of those games that everybody really contributed that played. You had a 10-man rotation, and everybody did something well. No one had any reason to be down. You know, Monte Ellis being 6 for 6 from the field and being a big contributor and playing big minutes in the fourth quarter, it's important for this team to have Monte a big part of it. So it's back to your original question about the rotations and the playing time. I just think that for this team to play well, Monte is kind of a vocal leader on this team. Sometimes maybe says even more than you would like at times, but he's been pretty positive for the most part, I think. And you have to have him a part of the mix and really contributing. And that makes for a boisterous locker room when Monte Ellis is in a good mood. And everybody was in a good mood last night. So the only thing I'd like to see is maybe a little more CJ Miles. But when everybody else is playing like they were last night, especially offensively, you don't need as much from CJ.
We look forward now at the standings. It's so incredibly close. And in fact, the Charlotte Hornets have lost 2 in a row. And Orlando's won 1. It's gotten tighter in the last week. Charlotte is 4 at 19-16. They're 8 games back. Detroit is kind of that final team in the mix. They're 12 games back. But it's even tighter if you focus in a little bit closer. Milwaukee is 9 back, and they are in the 6th spot, and New York is 10.5 back. They're in the 10th spot, so there's only a game and a half that separates right now 6 from 10. The Pacers currently sit at 7 at 18-18. It's so incredibly tight in that Eastern Conference. Boston is trying to separate a little bit. They're 7 over. They've won 2 in a row and are now 6 back, but not even they're out of reach. I think a lot of teams right now, as we get to this halfway point, we've seen the East do this the past couple of years, but I'm trying to remember. I don't think it lasted this long last season. I think it started to disperse a little bit right now. It makes for an interesting mental side to things, because as teams try to decide whether they're buyers or sellers, the Pistons right now, as we mentioned, they've lost 8 of their last 10. They look down, a team that maybe would like to make a move for the future, but they're also 2 games out of the playoffs. We're not yet at trade talk time. That's probably another month down the road or so when we get really close to that deadline. But just curious on your general thoughts as you look at the Eastern Conference, certainly as it relates to the Pacers, who right now are just a game and a half out of fourth position behind Charlotte, and of course winners of 3 in a row. We'll look at the schedule in a moment. A couple of very winnable games coming up, a very winnable month coming up. But a lot of teams, despite the fact of how they're playing, I think could take an optimistic mindset that they're only a couple games out of being where they want to be.
I think you're right, and if there's anybody that would say, you know, you're a seller or this isn't your season, it's probably the Miami Heat. They're not desperate to get into the playoffs. They've had a nice run, and it appears they are definitely going towards the rebuilding mode. I guess that makes that loss at Miami a little more frustrating even for the Pacers, but if you get another opportunity when you face the Heat again, you've got to take advantage of the fact that it appears as though Miami is looking to the future. But those other teams that are currently out of the mix in the Eastern Conference are all teams that I think their fan base, their ownership, everyone involved wants to get in the playoffs at any cost. So I have a hard time thinking someone's going to be just looking to the future from a selling perspective from those teams that are outside the mix. The ones that would be more likely would be someone that maybe like Atlanta, that it had good success, and if they start to drop off, it wouldn't be the end of the world if they miss the playoffs. So I think you're right in the fact that still 12 teams can say, hey, we could be in the playoffs, we want to be in the playoffs. And it's important for the Pacers, though, to make this run, and you will not hear a player or a coach talk about the schedule and the opponent's records, and you can always get caught when you look at a team. I mean, it goes back to youth basketball in second grade. If you think you're going to win a game against a team because you've already beaten them before or they don't have a very good record, chances are they're going to beat you. So you can't, if you're a player, you can't look at the schedule and the opponent's win percentage. But John Schumann on NBA.com went through all of the records and the schedules in January, and the Pacers have the easiest schedule in the Eastern Conference by opponent's winning percentage in this month. So you have to take advantage, because if you just peek at February, there are some very difficult games, some road trips. The All-Star break is in the middle of that, but it'll not be easy to go 4 or 5 in a row or to win 8 of 10 in February. So you've got to do that, I think, in January. You had a big road win in Detroit. Now you got to take advantage of the home floor the next 2 games. And if you could somehow head to that London trip with a 5-game winning streak, just think what a happy flight that would be and what a good vibe would be around that team that week in London.
The Pacers currently 18-18 on the season. Let's transition now into our pick 3. And it's an interesting one this week. Pick 3 is where you pick something, I pick something on a specific topic, and then we combine for a third pick. They're all over the place. Last week we were talking about items in the gift shop.
By the way, did you get a extra bonus or an extra shirt from the gift shop because of our free promotion there?
Oh, good point. I forgot to follow up on that.
Yeah. Well, we didn't do it for that reason, but I just figured that the store was flooded with people who took our suggestions and went in there last week.
That's a good point. See, we appreciate certainly when you come up to us at a game or whatever and say, hey, love the podcast. I've gotten that more already than I thought I was going to get the entire season, which is really cool. It's cool to see that audience, and certainly it helps when Celeste Ballou, which I don't mean to go down a rabbit hole here, but by the way, if you haven't heard, Eddie White went around the house on Pacers Weekly. Eddie White finds someone around the field house that has an interesting story to tell often, and you don't know their story. And this week, I don't know what took him so long to get to this. Celeste Ballou is one of the most interesting people here with the Pacers. She runs at Pacers on Twitter, the Pacers Facebook. She's the social media guru, and every post comes from her. So if you go to, if you're listening to this from the Pacers.com/soundlink, or if you're listening to this on SoundCloud, it's very easy to find Pacers Weekly from last week. And there's minute markers in there. I can't remember where it is. It's usually somewhere in the 30s. You can listen to Eddie with Celeste Ballou, and she goes into everything that it takes to run that Pacers Twitter account, which is, it's really interesting stuff. I mean, Jeremiah, you think about our audience, and our audience is, you know, they see you on TV, they hear me on radio, certainly see me for the TV portion. We're fairly visible faces and voices, but Celeste, it's just on Twitter, and I think it's really cool. She talked about it when a lot of people come up and see, oh my gosh, a girl runs Pacers Twitter, but Celeste is so good at her job and what she does, and I got down that rabbit hole because I was talking about when she will tweet this out on the Pacers account, and it gets 841,000 followers sent out to. That certainly helps our listenership. And back to your point, to come back all the way around with this, we certainly appreciate when you come up and say, you know, we listen to the podcast, we love hearing that kind of thing. Tell the people in the gift shop that we were giving them love, and they would appreciate that as well. Move our message forward to who we are promoting. I know they would love that over there.
Yeah, just like when Chris Denari gets an extra check from all those who purchase Connecticut water systems because of his affiliation with Connecticut. I think it's time for you and I to, you know, reap some of those benefits as well.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think we're reaching out as far as we can in that regard. Okay, so our pick three, anyways, forgot what we're doing. Pick three is this week. Pick three teams that are currently in that won't be in, either East or West. We're not quite to the halfway point, so it's still early, but, you know, a lot of, if you go back and look at season standings through this point, a lot of times 70 to 80 to even 85% of the teams that are in now end up making the playoffs in some fashion. So oftentimes what you're seeing now often are the playoff teams. It becomes a little different in the East. Things are so jumbled. The West, things are very, very spread out. But we want to pick three teams, East or West, that are in now that won't be in when we're talking to you in mid-April. I'll let you start.
Yeah, and just to your point about teams form holding a little bit, I think at the quarter poll through 2021 games, I saw a stat that over the last three seasons, there were maybe only two teams that made the playoffs that weren't in the top eight as of 25% of the way through the season. So now we're getting closer to the halfway point. And while those teams that are on the outside looking in the Eastern Conference are not far away, we've tended to see the teams in the top eight hold that form and make the playoffs. So I still think, though, there is some room for movement. So my pick is not going to be a popular one because it seems like, in terms of popularity, the Milwaukee Bucks are the team that everybody seems to be in love with. All I hear on Twitter or see on Twitter is people saying they're the favorite league pass team. I'm not sure there's a national NBA writer that hasn't done an in-depth feature on Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I'm just not a believer in everything about the Bucks. And I think that at some point, while Giannis is a star in this league, he's going to, you know, definitely, I think, be an all-star this season, and he's someone to look forward to the future. I just think that there are some missing parts with that team, and I'm not a true believer in Jason Kidd's ability, when faced with adversity, to get that team together. So while they're playing great and everybody's in love with them, the reality is they have a 17-16 record, and they are only a game and a half ahead of both Washington and the Knicks. So should they have any injury issues, should they have any difficulty, you know, road bumps, I think that those are two teams that could jump past the Bucks. So I'm going to say the Bucks, while they are sixth right now, and you could easily make a case that maybe they're going to get up to fourth and they'll be a home court advantage team in the first round, I'll go the other direction. I'll say the Bucks miss the playoffs. And my surprising team to take their place is actually going to be the Orlando Magic. And this is not based on Orlando's great talent, because I think they have some mismatched parts as well. But I'll just take Frank Vogel over Jason Kidd any day. And I like the way that Orlando, despite another disappointing loss at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, the following night went and won at the Garden against the Knicks. I think this is a team that'll be fighting until the very end. It's important to Frank Vogel and the Magic franchise to get into the playoffs. So I'm going to trade the Magic for the Bucks in an unlikely contrarian pick.
I like it. You know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's having just an unbelievable year. As you pointed out, 24 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists. Those are like Oscar Robertson-style numbers. But the one thing about his game, and the one thing that I wasn't fully able to grasp when we played them the one game, And this is so much easier said than done. And I understand that. And he's an absolute freak. He looked like he had a dunk the other day where he looked like, is it Jordan in the Space Jam movie where his arm like extends to ridiculous lengths late for a dunk? His arms look like that. They're cartoonish how his ridiculous length. But he, this season, is a 29% three-point shooter, and on the season, or on his career, I should say, is a 28% three-point shooter. He's running the point. It would seem to me that teams are going to start, if they aren't already, and maybe he's just so good that it doesn't matter, but you got to give him the Rondo treatment, don't you? Don't you have to start guarding him at the foul line and let him shoot the three if he wants it? And if a 29% three-point shooter is going to shoot the three, you're okay with that. Everything else he does, and especially if you guard him closely, you're in a severe mismatch.
Absolutely, and I think that's the key, is that if you can keep him in transition from getting, because in a half-court game, I think you can do that. It's difficult to do when they're getting out and running. But I definitely think that the book would be out on him, and he's been able to beat those defenses. I think teams are trying that. They're backing off on him, but he still finds ways to get by opponents that have given him the space from the outside. So he's a star. If he can just improve his shooting, it's scary. All right, so what you got, Pat? What's your team?
Yeah. My pick is also unpopular. See, I think a popular pick here is Chicago. They seem disjointed. Rajon Rondo, who knows what's going to happen with him? He's not playing. I'm not saying I'm a huge believer in Chicago, but an interesting team that I want to go in this direction is the Atlanta Hawks. We saw them here, and actually Atlanta won in an impressive game. The Pacers were out of sorts. You know, Schroeder has taken over for point for Teague. I would take Teague over Schroeder, although I understand why they like him, but another guy who's a little Rondo-esque, he can't shoot. But here's what the thing is for Atlanta that is a wild card that none of these other teams have. They have their star in a contract year, and they got to figure out what they're going to do with him. And Paul Millsap, he's 32, so it's not like the situation the Pacers could potentially face next year if Paul hasn't extended, where George is in his prime. Millsap's a little bit older, but they've got to figure out Paul Millsap, what they're going to do with him, and they lost Horford for nothing last year. And they were able to bring in Howard and sort of pick up the pieces immediately in free agency and try to remain competitive, but you can't lose Horford and Millsap and get nothing for those guys and survive as a franchise. So Atlanta's 18-16. They've picked things up recently. I'm picking a team who, you picked a team who's won two in a row. I'm picking a team who's won three in a row to not make it. But I think if you're Atlanta, you're a little scared off by what happened with losing Horford and not getting anything for him. They could have gotten a ton for him if they traded him. You're worried about that happening to Millsap too, I think. And I think there's a lot of teams, maybe Toronto, maybe Boston, who could really use a guy, certainly a couple teams out west, like Millsap and what he brings and his veteran leadership. And I think if you're Atlanta, you have to think bigger picture here. You're kind of in the mix, and yeah, right now you're the 5 seed, but what's more important? If you can get a piece that could help you for the next 10 years, maybe you sacrifice this season. And we've already seen they're very, very streaky this year. So I'm going to pick Atlanta. I'm going to say they have to do something with Millsap to risk not getting anything for him, and that's going to drop Atlanta out. And this is going to be an unpopular pick too. I kind of like the Knicks. Carmelo has his obvious flaws, and I don't think he's a player that you can win a championship around, but he is a player that you can make the playoffs around. Porzingis is such a freak, and I think they've made some moves to just kind of... Last year, like, they had a really good starting five, but their bench was horrendous. I think they've solidified some of those positions enough. I think the Knicks might be the last team to get in. I'm not picking Washington because Washington is 3-12 on the road, and right now they've played 4 more home games than road games, so they got to catch up with some road games, and right now they're already on the outside looking in. So I'm going to say the Knicks because they have so many matchup problems, because Carmelo is such a good scorer, because Porzingis is such a freak, because while I'm not a huge Noah fan at this point in his career, he is a solid player down there in the post, and I think Courtney Lee is really solid at that shooting guard position. I'm going to say the Knicks make it and the Hawks don't make it. We're not exactly barking up the popular tree right now, though.
Yeah, but that's what fans expect. I mean, anybody could sit here and say, yeah, the Bulls are going to fade out and the Wizards are going to get in. But, you know, I just think that maybe it's an unpredictable year. And so if you take out the teams currently 5th and 6th, then you're going to say the top four, Cleveland, Raptors, Celtics, Hornets, maybe in different orders, but those teams, I'm pretty confident they all make the playoffs, and so then you'd bump the Pacers and Bulls in, and so far we've said Knicks and Magic in. Wizards would be the team I'd keep an eye on. I'm not a believer in what I've seen now twice from Detroit, so I'll say Detroit continues to stay out of the mix, and in all reality, it's probably unlikely that both Atlanta and Milwaukee fall out, but we like to give you, the listeners, something to think about, so that's a good choice, Pat, and I think it's pretty obvious where we would need to go with our group pick in the pick three, because if you look at the Western Conference, I cannot see too many scenarios that the teams in the top seven do not stay in the playoffs, and it looks like four or five teams that are fighting for the eighth spot and the right to play the Golden State Warriors in the first round of the playoffs. So while that does not seem like a great prize of the teams currently fading, yeah, I don't like Portland at all. I don't think they play any defense, and I think they could be a seller at the deadline. Denver seems to be disjointed and struggling. I'm going to say the Pelicans climb into the eighth spot and the Kings fall out. Do you agree with that, with our group pick?
Yeah, I agree with the group pick of Kings falling out. I'm never going to pick the Kings, ever. they have too many. There's so much talent there. I mean, you look, Ty Lawson's had a nice year over there. DeMarcus Cousins is, like, you can make a case that he's better. He's a better talent than Anthony Davis. You can make a case. But there's just too much going on, too much sideshow. As you alluded to, here's what the West standings look like. Memphis right now, it's the total opposite of the East. Memphis is in seventh, and they are 5.5 games ahead of Sacramento in eighth. Not to say that they couldn't fall out, or Oklahoma City's there too, Utah's there. It almost looks like seven teams for the West are already locked in. Not officially, but a 5.5 game gap is huge, especially when the teams all trailing you have major flaws. Sacramento is 14.5 back, and then Portland's 15.5 back. Denver right there is 16 back. Pelicans are 16.5. I like the talent on the Lakers, even though I'm not a huge D'Angelo Russell fan. I do like what Ingram could be. I like Randall a lot, and I like having Mozgov there and some of the pieces there, Lou Williams. I hear you that Portland plays no defense. I might pick them still to make it, though, because that backcourt is so good, and they're sort of like the Pacers. If they can just play a little defense, the Pacers, if they can just rebound a little bit, I think they do have a lot of talent. They made the playoffs last year, so I'll agree with you. Sacramento out, I'll say Portland in. Portland and the Pelicans are within a game of each other, so those are both certainly viable picks for teams that could do it.
All right, fair point, good pick, and if we're completely wrong, please don't remind us of this April 13th.
We'll just delete the podcast so you can't even go back and prove it.
And Celeste can use her social media skills to just remove all mentions as well.
Yes, yes. All right, let's close this up, let's wrap this up, and let's look ahead. Two games to look at for the near future, and then there's that London game out in Denver. This is why the Pistons game was so important in my eyes. First of all, to get that monkey off your back and win your third straight, but there's a real opportunity to now clump together a big winning streak, or even if you lose one in here, a long winning stretch. And it starts Thursday against Brooklyn. The next two teams that the Pacers have coming into the Fieldhouse are the Brooklyn Nets, who are 8-25. The Knicks, who I, of course, just picked to make the playoffs. I'm going to contradict myself a little bit here. But the Knicks are 5-12 on the road. They're 16-18 overall. But the Knicks are 5-12 on the road. The Nets are 1-16 on the road. The next two opponents in the Fieldhouse are 6-28. You've won three in a row. This is really a chance to string some together, starting with Brooklyn.
And I think that it will be important to come out and dominate at least one of these opponents. I think anybody that watches much of the NBA knows that probably one of these games will be maybe closer than it should be or closer than you'd like it to be. But get off to good starts and flex your muscles a little bit. Show that you're the better team. Show that you're at home. Show that you're playing with confidence. Do it early. Don't allow a team like Brooklyn to get any confidence, because while they have an 8-25 record, they have the worst record in the NBA. They have one win against the Pacers, so that should have everyone in that Pacers locker room. They should have their attention, and they should want to make sure that they get their second win in three tries against the Nets, and they can extend this winning streak. But I think it'll be a good sign if they get off to a good start and kind of just, you know, prove that they are the better team, show that they're the better team, and just do everything that we've seen them do really over the last three games. So fun couple of games coming up, and then Saturday night should be a very entertaining night for everyone at the Fieldhouse or those watching or listening from home. with the 80s decade night festivities.
Yeah, totally agree. Chuck Person is the bobblehead honoree, but they're honoring, of course, as they always do, a bunch of different guys from that 80s decade. And I just saw this yesterday. Very convenient. Jerry Seesting is an assistant coach with the Knicks and, of course, was a Pacer during that time. So he's going to be in the Fieldhouse anyway. So that was some – I don't know if that was intentional or not. I don't know if you plan anything around that, but that was a really nice happenstance if it's not.
You know, it's nice that it's the Knicks, I think, that Knicks are in town. Now, you would think more about the Knicks rivalry maybe for 90s decade night, so it cannot be perfect. But the fact that you're celebrating your 50th season of Pacers basketball and one of the nights that you're doing so with the Knicks in town, I think, you know, it would be good to get this rivalry back to the way it used to be. And the first game against the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, you know, it wasn't an epic game, but it was a pretty hard-fought game. And just what I saw in the flashes with Porzingis against Miles Turner, I just had a feeling like the rivalry could be coming back a little bit. And if these are teams that are fighting for positioning or playoff spots in the Eastern Conference, I think we could see the makings of a little Pacers-Knicks rivalry starting again. So it's a great opponent to have in town on an 80s decade night.
Brooklyn Nets are on Thursday, January 5th, a 7 o'clock tip. Pre-game show on Fox Sports Indiana with Jeremiah Johnson will begin at 6:30 on Thursday against Brooklyn. Don't forget, they have the appropriately named Brook Lopez still on that team. Whenever we play Brooklyn, he scares me because he's a player that is just so good despite the fact that that team is so bad. You always have to keep an eye on him. Knicks, we went into them in depth when I picked them to make the playoffs. But lots of mismatch problems. Anthony, Porzingis, certainly what Noah is. The Knicks are a really interesting team to watch. I think if nothing else, you're going to see, I love the Porzingis-Miles Turner back and forth. Both of those guys played great in their game in New York. That's Saturday, January the 7th. That's a 7 o'clock tip. Also 6:30 on the radio and television pregame shows as well. Make sure to catch those. The pregame coverage leading up. Postgame coverage as well on both radio and on television. Pacers Weekly, as always, you'll hear Jeremiah Johnson on that, is Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on 1070 The Fan and 93.5 FM. That show is just in Indianapolis, but since it is just in Indianapolis, we podcast it to where you can, where you're listening to this, you can also catch Pacers Weekly as well, and that show's fantastic. It's an hour. It is so jammed.
Wait a sec. The host of the show says it's fantastic. Hold on.
The host of, this is not self-serving. The host of the show barely talks in the show. The host of the show just says, "All right, Chris Denari, do your thing. All right, Mark Boyle, do your thing. Here's when you can get tickets." You and I, though, do talk, and personally, I think that is far and away the best segment.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I can't argue with you. I think it's a fantastic show, and I really like that segment that you and I have together.
that's from 10 to 11 on Saturday morning. The next time we'll talk to you, real quickly, I know I want to wrap up here, but you guys leave for London on Sunday, correct?
That is correct. So game against the Knicks on Saturday, Sunday night. Overnight flight to London, and with the time change, it'll be one of those flights where we leave in the early evening Sunday and we arrive morning time Monday. So it'll be one day to kind of get acclimated to the time change and get adjusted and start sightseeing just a little bit as well.
Yeah, have you been to London? Is this your first trip?
I have not. I think I need to talk with world traveler Pat Boylan before I leave for my do's and don'ts, right?
Well, yeah, I've been a couple of times.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, went for the Olympics back with Ball State, which was a fantastic opportunity. Then went to Europe for a couple weeks, and London was a stop. I'll give you some tips, but most importantly, we got to figure out how we're going to, because I'm going to bug you to do a podcast from over there, and we got to figure out how that's going to work. But
here's my thought. Okay, maybe we got to figure out a way to make the laptop work well, but. You know, we're going to be over there for basically 4.5 days with just one game. And so I think it's only fair to get either Chris Denari or Quinn Buckner or maybe even Mark Boyle to pull them aside and say, you're not working too hard this week. How about we have like a family podcast? So it's the sideline like guys plus, you know, the guys who really do the hard work. the game broadcasters. So maybe I could, you know, I could even bring the laptop to one of those famous pubs and just set it down, and we could actually kind of rub it in your face a little bit with all the fun that you'll hear in the background while you're back in Indianapolis.
You know, I it's funny because when I went to London over the summer, I was in London and then toured a lot of Europe. I knew that we were going to London, but it wasn't official yet. And so I obviously didn't talk about it with anybody there, but I so badly wanted to be like, yo, you guys, the Pacers are coming and you got to check out the NBA and it's so cool. And it's coming to the O2 Arena or whatever. And unfortunately we announced that we were going like the day after I left London. So I didn't even get to sit there and tell everybody that we were going, that they got to check out my team, our team and you know what we do, even though I'm not going to be there. But I planned the trip before I knew we were going. So it was kind of nice for me. It's almost like my, hey, I'm still going to get to go to London, even if it's not to cover the basketball game, but still go in the near future. So yeah, I think you got to set the laptop down in a pub and get Denari or Quinn or whomever. But I want to hear stories from London and maybe even get that local guy who's been sitting in the bar for like 12 hours get some of his thoughts. And these podcasts obviously aren't live, so we can edit them out if they get inappropriate.
That sounds like a plan.
All right. That's Jeremiah Johnson. Next time you're hearing from him on the Sideline Guys podcast, as long as everything goes well, he'll be out in London. That game Thursday in Denver, it's 3:00 local. But more importantly, chance to be in the Fieldhouse Thursday, Saturday. Pacers.com/tickets or the box office is how you can purchase tickets. Brooklyn Nets are up next. That is on Thursday, a 7:00 tip. 6:30 pregame show on Fox Sports Indiana with JJ. We'll start you on the radio at 6:30 as well across the Bankers Life radio network. Jeremiah, good to talk to you. Good to talk to you after a win. Good to talk to you after three wins. And we'll talk, of course, plenty of times until London, but the next time as it relates to this podcast, we'll talk to you in London, hopefully.
Sounds good. Thanks, Pat.
All right, that wraps it up for the Sideline Guys podcast. We'll talk to you next week.